This program deals with themes of an adult nature and is intended for a mature audience.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
We must guard against the military-industrial complex.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
The power they took from the people will return to the people.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Shall I tell you what I find beautiful about you? You are at your very best when things are worse.
Sooner or later, though, you always have to wake up.
Be skeptical, but don't close your mind.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Veritas at veritasradio.com. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home. Thanks to all our members for making our truth journey a reality. To listen to segment 2 of tonight's interview, go to our website at veritasradio.com and subscribe. You'll receive your login immediately. And Sanitas Radio is now on the air. Listen to the premiere episode, which you can share with everyone in its entirety. It includes previews to many of our upcoming shows. Sanitas will declassify your health with a focus on mind, body, and spirit, because your health and longevity should not be classified information. Subscribe at sanitasradio.com. And to get in touch with us for member support, media inquiries, you want to be a guest or are a whistleblower, there's a link for you by clicking on the contact button of our website at veritasradio.com. And tonight's special guest is already a veteran of this show. By popular demand, Dr. Richard Allen Miller is back right now on Veritas. Dr. Richard Allen Miller is one of the pioneers in the study of the paranormal. His work in mind control is unparalleled. Beginning in the early 1970s with Navy intel, that work included chip implants, drug studies, telepathine, ketamine, and BZ gas, and synthetic telepathy. Today, with newer definitions on what constitutes the mind, that field has taken a new direction. Dr. Miller is in his element with his take on Dr. Timothy Leary's 8-circuit model of consciousness. Using his holographic model of the universe now allows for a more comprehensive definition of the mind. These neurologic circuits become memes or resolutions of the hologram. The new direction in mind control have evolved. Electromagnetic manipulation of our minds and genetic modification of our foods are already techniques of mass social control. The mind is being targeted through the gut via genetically modified foods. And Dr. Miller suggests what we can do about it. What better way to break down the natural workings of the human mind than through our global food supply? From studies designed to enhance military performance, Dr. Richard Allen Miller has created invaluable tools for living life in the 21st century. Power tools for the 21st century are the protocols that were developed for the Navy SEALs to create super soldiers. These power tools can be used today for our own personal evolution of consciousness. Dr. Miller makes these protocols available to all of us for use on an everyday basis as tools to expand our consciousness. And to learn more about Dr. Richard Allen Miller, his work, and purchase his new book, Power Tools for the 21st Century, visit his websites at richardallenmiller.com or oak-publishing.com, which are also linked at ours. And directly from Grants Pass, Oregon, I'm privileged to once again have our Veritas friend, Dr. Richard Allen Miller, return. Hello, Richard, and welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, and thank you for having me. I really enjoy you. I have enjoyed some of your other interviews, and, you know, we can talk about some of those at some point, you know, like the Infobots and the current algorithms that are being used now to listen to the chatter on the internet, be able to accurately predict future events. One last week would suggest that Fukushima was an extinction event and that no life will exist in the biosphere by the year 2050. And so that's kind of a doom and gloom. And, you know, to realize that...
Wait to start the interview, Richard.
What's that?
I'm saying wait to start the interview.
Yeah, sorry about that. Would you like to go there? Where would you like to go?
No, absolutely. In fact, I had written it here. We cannot just bury our heads in the sand, Richard, and everybody who's listening. Fukushima seems to be one of the most important events of our lifetime. And what makes me wonder, Richard, you and I discussed this a few days ago. And first of all, thank you for covering today. We had a cancellation, and Richard was kind enough. We had scheduled him for a couple of weeks, but he basically filled the spot today. He sent me his new book, and you know, I'm amazed about all the new work. But Fukushima, why is it that we want to go attack Syria, but the military of the world doesn't see that Fukushima is affecting every single country, every single living being on the planet? Why haven't we done something before?
This is a serious problem. There is a group of us that know each other informally called the League of Concerned Scientists. And that was at the top of the list of Fukushima. You know, you got chemtrails and GMOs, and it goes down from there. But really, the issue right now is that nothing coming out of the Pacific Ocean is probably safe to eat anymore. And that's that. Yeah, I live on the coast of Oregon, and I grew up eating seafood, and I can't do that anymore. I'm working out of my garden. Matt Stein and I do urban survival skill workshops. And because just this last week, Medford and Ashland and Grants Pass, Oregon, held their first series of FEMA educations. Here it goes, just like in the movies. And they're talking now about a 9.0, quote, big one, end quote. That's what it's called. And they have government officials out doing lectures and workshops. Last night was the thing on GMOs, but, you know, that's what's happening now, is the discussion of an earthquake off the coast of Oregon. It's due. And we're talking about a 9.0, which means that even the most stable of houses will be knocked off their foundations. And that's a fact. And zombies would be East LA when they're out of food. The whole thing, in a heartbeat, could collapse. It's so fragile and so arbitrary on what could happen. And now our seafood is contaminated. It's to the point now where if we don't do something, the Infobots that you've described with Cliff High and others, that's going to be an extinction type event. And that's why Mars has been colonized. Now, I'm speaking, like with Navy flags. I'm here to tell you that I don't have a clue on how to clean up Fukushima. What I do know is that there are 17 further nuclear reactors like Fukushima on the Madrid fault line. How's that work? And we have pretty much closed down all of our nuclear reactors on the West Coast. Trojan up in Washington, for example. That tower doesn't even exist anymore. It's gone. But Hanford is leaking radiation from six barrels right into the Columbia River as we speak. And now there are food warnings on the Columbia River. That's a fact. So with that said, where do we go? And that's the book I'm writing now called The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe, where one would see the brain as a four-dimensional hologram of five space, and that if you could navigate your brain, you could change the movie.
You know, a few things that are happening, I believe, is next week there's a drill, Region 3, FEMA Region 3 of the United States.
Yeah.
You know, whenever they have a drill, you know, that sometimes they like to put practice into action, you know, if we had to look at the last events. But the question is, and I'm glad that you referred me to Matthew Stein. We did a great interview after you and I did ours.
Yeah.
And one very important aspect is if there's a power grid that goes down, for real, I'm not talking about a drill, hundreds of nuclear power plants would go into shutdown after 7 to 30 days, depending on how much they have left in their backup system, their cooling systems with diesel. Can you paint a scenario of what would really happen if that were to occur?
Well, Matt, he's got it down cold in his paper, 400 Chernobyls. The 17 that I talked about are made from GE and are very similar to the ones that are in Fukushima. They have an open pit cooling pond for spent plutonium rods. And it was a temporary fix, and they were going to leave the solution to our grandchildren to figure out. It's a temporary fix. You can't just leave plutonium open like that when you have hurricanes and all kinds of other weather that could come in and drop the grid for moving the water to cool it. And now it's leaking into the Pacific Ocean. That's like a China syndrome. It's out of control. And whether or not that's an extinction event, I'm very popular right now in some of my talks that I'm doing on the concept of ascension. Now, there's all kinds of forms of ascension that we can talk about. How to change the movie, how to basically do what Kurzweil would suggest, where we put our intelligence into a machine, like Ascension, a movie Johnny Depp just finished, but kind of a little bit like Free Jack or something. You know, the bottom line is, at some point, we're going to have to, Joseph Campbell said it best when he said that when you see the kingdom of the Father on earth, the apocalypse has already occurred. It is perpetual in its potential. And so now we come down to describing, well, what exactly is the physical plane? Is it possible that death is the point where you wake up and become timeless? And if you apply Jungian psychotherapy and some of the imaginal psychology of James Hellman into this equation, what you're left with is the possibilities of there's something else going on here besides the physical plane. And that if, you know, that's what metaphysics is about to physics, having a broader base, or meta, meaning beyond physics. And what you do is you have some assumed truths up here in this big meta cloud, and then it would translate down into the physical world. And basically, time and space are illusions. We can prove this now. And that, you know, this curved space and gravity is somehow no longer connected with time. It's an interesting universe right now in terms of what the physics and the landscape of where we're trying to go with Bose-Higgs, Einstein condensate, some of the other things that are going on. I believe that if you choose to look at the universe as being holographic in nature, that you have solutions that would allow a way out of jail. You know, Fukushima is like, well, right now, I would say we're about 3 milliseconds to midnight, and Mars is the only get out of jail card apparently currently available.
But, you know, for 29 months, Japan rejected any help. And finally, they accepted the help from the Russians. Why 29 months to save face?
Well, it's a cultural thing with Japan. they bow their heads and say, I murdered everybody. How's that work? Actually, I don't know to the full extent of how dangerous Fukushima is right now to you, but I don't eat seafood anymore, and I am writing like heck to figure out how to get out of this movie.
But when does it become, really, and I'm not joking when I say this, when does it become an act of war that they are not fixing the situation the way it should be? Why don't we converge? Why don't we create this synergy between all the brains in the world to make that happen?
I think that that's starting to happen with you and me right now and the people that are listening. It starts inside and projects outward. It isn't a physical plane thing. It's everything starts on the inside and is projected outwardly. And what you have is a numinous or collective unconscious. And it's time to change the intentionality. And that's basically, how does it work on greed, lust, anger, and jealousy, the five deadly sins, and how that's all playing out right now in terms of 9 to 12 families owning 90% of the world, and the rest of us get to divvy up what's left over. We're commodities right now, and when one of the technical papers I wrote was on the weaponization of epigenetics, this is no longer about GMOs. This is a much more insidious thing, and I presented us what they call a smoking gun when I was in Australia 2-3 months ago. Basically, what they're doing is altering genes to go after your great-great-granddaughter. And basically, it's a changing in the human structure so that you're mentally dumbed down, just like in the educational system. I did an incredible radio show this morning. Basically, it was a class of a sixth grade class, 32 students, each had a single question. Some of the questions were exceptional because it's not going to be you or me that changes this place.
It's them.
That's correct. And so it's time for an educational reform. And that's the other part of my intent right now in terms of why I'm talking to you, writing these books, and trying to educate people enough. They call me the postman because, as broad as I am a physicist, I'm also a world-class player in agriculture and basic alternative agriculture. I have a new set of books out called The Encyclopedia of Alternative Agriculture. That's why Kucinich and others call me the postman. What I'm trying to do now is set up infrastructure where we have educational reform based around a paradigm shift in agriculture. Food should no longer be on the monetary system. It should be part of your infrastructure like water is. And basically, it's simple. Chattanooga, for example, went out and took 400 kids under 4 years old with 60 master gardeners, and in the center of Chattanooga grew 40 acres of wildflowers, create wildflower salads to feed the homeless of Chattanooga. Now, this is a small group of children feeding a large group of adults with non-GMO foods. Everybody got it. It's not necessary to be doing it the way we do it. Now, I don't know, I have a 280Z that I restored. It's a 1976 280Z. It's a very special car. And I restored it, and I'm running it now off my garden. I have half my garden back there as in Comfrey with a Jack Daniel's still. No, it shows how, in terms of labor, my cost in that fuel is $2 a gallon. It's cheaper than gas. It's biodegradable. I can do it on my own. I don't need a service station. I don't need Teamsters. I don't need Arabs. I don't need anybody. I'm sovereign. Now, that is a state of mind that starts with each one of you. And my recommendation is you start with something doable. Start a garden this year. Next year, start canning. That's what I'm doing this year. Put up some deli cucumber kits. My office manager and I. It's very cool to get back into things with your hands like that and your relationship to the earth. It's not indigenous, but the kids are.
Why is it then, Rick, that, you know, I know many people who write to me want to do just that. They want to become truly sovereign.
Sure. Yeah.
But when you use the word sovereign these days, it's almost as if you're saying that you belong to Al-Qaeda.
Let's try it this way. The Greek had a word called autark. That will be one of the chapters in my book, which means supreme individual sovereignty. In Masonry, it's called grade 7, master of the temple. You create your own universe. That's what Gurdjieff and, you know, that's what it was all about. That concept of becoming more independent within yourself. And there are layers of that. It's not just physical. There's the emotional. We got to talk about EQ and water and the concepts of structure in water and how it affects our health when that water is inside your organ and up against that wall with it, what they call an EZ boundary. This is the concepts of the importance of water is actually even more important than the food you eat. And in one of my talks, I say now it's no longer you are what you eat. It's whom you feed. You're a habitat. You're not even human. You're less than 10% human. And the rest of you is bacteria and water transport processes. And they're trying for some kind of homeostasis or balance. And every single one of us is different. Some of us more alkaline, more this, more that. We have different kinds of bacteria on our forehead. That's why we have rosacea or blah, 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 blah with candida in the brain. There's foods you can eat that I developed for Navy SEALs that will give you an edge up. You know, you start working with polysaccharides and your oxygen being delivered to the body on a cellular level. And now, that's chapter one, now you're talking about ATP, which is where cold fusion occurs in the body. You look at the little ATP molecule, it's a little quark gluon plasma, little vortex, just like out of Penrose. Go figure.
Now explain that cold fusion occurring in the human body.
The Kervon got a Nobel Prize years ago on showing the biological transmutations in man. That was the thesis title that got him a Nobel Prize. And he basically showed the difference between sodium and potassium being changed in the body by some kind of cold fusion process. Didn't know what it was. Now we do. It's adenosine triphosphate. And you can look at the molecule. It's a little dynamo. It's in the brain. That means if you increase your ATP levels in the brain, guess what else happens? So it's all about physical plane and how to feed certain kinds of bacteria in the habitat that you're working with. In agriculture, it's called mycorrhizae, but the concept translates over. And we've only talked about two of Timothy Leary's 8 levels of consciousness. And we talked about physical and emotional. Water, physical plane survival, you know, with what you eat and things of that nature. Then you start getting into things like breath control. I had a Sifu that taught me, this is another chapter, how to change my perception of time with breathing. If you start with Tai Chi, and as you learn how to do it correctly, you change your breath control, and what happens next is you go into an altered state of consciousness where you're hallucinating. And basically, that level of hallucination between being passing out and being able to manage and navigate your body, very subtle narrow band in there, you can experience everything in slow motion. Your moves in Hung Gao, perfect. That's another thing that the SEALs did. They learned how to change their perception of time with breath control. There's all different elements involved here in terms of how to take possession and personal responsibility for your own evolution. That's what I'm about, is trying to offer tools, toys, brain drivers, virtual audio, where you can do hypnosis and other kinds of tools to move and change this movie. And it all starts with the individual. How did they put it? My great-grandfather said it to Rudolf Steiner. He said, with J.L. Nelson, you know, Masonic Lodge in Switzerland, he said, we are no longer at war in the physical world. That if we wish to change this world, we change ourselves, and the world changes with us. And that's how it works.
Now, truckers in the United States want to shut down America in October. You probably heard that. That's as close, Rick, as shutting down the grid as we're going to get. What should people buy right now in order to be prepared? What is going to be the most important food that people should have in their pantry?
Well, what do you eat most? Sugar. I'm kidding. Look, it's metaphysically, you have 3 minutes for air, 3 days for water, and 3 weeks for food. What do you think's most important?
Water. Well, air, but water.
Yeah, you better make sure you're breathing. That's a good thing to start with. Then you need to have water on hand and have some source of getting water if you don't have power because your well doesn't work. You can pump it out by hand. You can go down to the river and hump it out. Oh, that's a chore. And then, break it down, infusion or, distillation. There's all kinds of possibilities. That would be a good place to start. Food is important, okay? So what do you eat mostly? It isn't going to be lentil beans. How many beans have you eaten of lentil? See, the problem is the whole thing about food is that our diet is wrong. And so a way to prepare now on that is to change your food choices. Start there. They talk about microwave and how poor it is and bad it is on nuking things, because it cross-links and does things like that. And I discovered that when you put water in a microwave, you're destructuring it from the inside out. And that's why when a grade school kid will feed it to a plant, it dies. Because while it's water, the plant cannot recognize it as water because it doesn't have any structuring in it. It's been destructured. Now, when you think about that, then you look at yourself boiling something on a tabletop, and you're realizing that you're destructuring the water from the outside in. It isn't quite as bad, but maybe, for example, an argument for why you want to eat raw. Natural.
So people who don't have that much time because they're always on the run, they boil water in the microwave for tea. Does that change the effect?
Yes. It means that the water goes straight to the bladder and that your water for digestion has to come out of bone marrow. And then you are slightly dehydrated and your brain doesn't function quite as efficiently. How's that work?
That is serious.
Well, there it is. Read it and weep. And plastic bottles, for example, will change the structure of the water because of the sunlight. It just ruins it. If you want something in bottles, put it in a dark glass. That's a good one. What you're after is surface tension. When the way cold fusion works, it's very simple. Basically, the water has a thing called surface tension. And predicated on what it touches, the surface tension changes. It's the material in the boundary layer between the two. If it's iridium, now what you have is what's called a Patterson cell, where you put 1 volt in and you have 100 volts coming out of the bottom end. And that's a valid form of cold fusion that MIT is now producing. And I tell you, it's the smaller the iridium ball, surface tension, because you have a lot of surface. And so the smaller the particle, more voltage comes out the other end. It's called nanometer. So you see, it's a mathematical conceptual. And water is normally H7O9 with a free radical. It'll bond usually with 2 or 3 molecules and a free ion. That's the normal state of water in what we call a semi-structure. And basically what that does, predicated on what surface it touches, like the inside of your bladder, the water on the inside of your organ, is extremely important. That's why emotionally, you want to be careful on the thoughts you choose to entertain, because that sets up what we call inner landscape. That's another chapter in my book. And the way you think about things and allowing what's possible in your mind's eye. Why do you do that? You change and use your beliefs like you would a pair of clothing. It's arbitrary why you believe one thing over another. In fact, I'm now discovering it's arbitrary on how the dots connect. Imagine that.
Now, with water, once again, let me just stay with this topic.
I'm moving right along, aren't I, Mel?
No, that's okay. I think water, as you say, aside from our oxygen, I think water is the most important aspect for survival. But
well,
I'm just thinking.
That's the Jerry Pollack one. When you talk to Jerry and you interview with Jerry, Jerry's work, he's professor emeritus now at the University of Washington. He's the one that hired me when I first started working military. You got to get the picture here. Boeing has just lost the B-1 contract, and 50,000 PhD scientists are given the pink slip in one day. There was a big sign, the edge of Seattle, where the last person out of town, please turn off the lights. To get a job in Seattle was impossible. Here I am, a junior physicist from Boeing, along with 50,000 others, and Jerry hires me on the spot. I'm really lucky, but not to know. I didn't work for Jerry. I worked.
And by the way, Jerry, thanks to you, he's coming on to Sanitas in a few weeks, and we're going to discuss the structure of water.
It's as important as anything that I might discuss as well. Water is probably more important than your food. So when you want to go back to your original question, what do you do to prepare? I would make sure you have at least 3 days of water for every single person in your household, including your animals. And how do you calculate that? You take their weight in pounds, divide it by two, and that's how many ounces you need. If you're 200 pounds, you need 100 ounces per person per day.
What about people who don't have access to a lake or a river? People who live in the desert and they have pools, can they distill? First of all, they have to get a distillation machine that's powerless. What do you tell people who don't have access to that and they have pools?
Move. I'm kidding. Every environment has its own resources. And water is found in deserts as easily as it is on the beaches. There's lots of water out there. We can't drink it. So there it is. You have to be aware. Down in Oregon, for example, we have to test for arsenic. We have serpentine soil, volcanic, and so, of course, that's like right out of the gate. It's not some animal committing suicide above you or something or urinating in the stream. It's about arsenic in our area. If you go up into Washington, you're a lot easier, and, of course, Canada, the water gets cleaner and cleaner. Rainwater. They put a guy in Medford next door to me in jail for collecting his own rainwater off his roof. Can you imagine?
Now, explain that too. I think Utah, Washington, Colorado, they're banning the collection of rainwater. How in the world is that possible?
Rain that falls belongs to the state. That means it belongs to everybody, not you. And so it's a type of easement like they can do with mining and other things like that, man. It's stupid. And well, knowledge and awareness, people will change those laws. Good luck. Colorado, you know, we do marijuana here, but we're not like Washington. And it's like there's all kinds of issues. That's why there's a group of congressmen that now believe that the United States, most likely when the grid collapses, will probably fragment into about 9 provinces. You know, little principalities where the state of California, Oregon, and Washington, for example, have issues against the federal government in marijuana, whereas Ohio has issues with the federal government on the subsidy of corn production and GMOs. And so there's issues with groups of states, the federal government versus the state and local government. And as we crash a grid, I mean, that was another question you asked, how bad is it going to be? Well, Matt suggests that the large capacitor that channels the grid from all of North America except Texas is so impossible to reproduce, it would be up to 3 years before we'd have the spare parts reproduced again to build that back up. It could be as many as 3 years for the grid down. There are people now from Hurricane Sandy still do not have power on the East Coast.
Yeah, Dr. Paul Laviolette talks about that too. But can you distill pool water? Is that safe to drink?
Well, yeah, that sounds to me. If you've got a swimming pool, that sounds to me like your water resource. Fill it up, line it, and put a cap on it. That's a good concept. Absolutely.
But you have to put some minerals because you lose the calcium, magnesium, and iron in the distillation.
What you do is you pull it from there and then you filter and refilter and do whatever is necessary. There's a lot of physics in this collection of water. What I would recommend, should the grid go down, it'll possibly in any area like coronal mass ejection, these FEMA free, you know, studies, what they're going to do, see what their emergency response is about. They're probably 3 days, and 3 days of water is for everyone in the household and your animals. That's what I would recommend. That's what I do right now. And then I have an alternate plan if I have to get further water. There's some people, we have water delivered because I'm in the city, but there are some local wells around. What we've done is put hand pumps on them so you can pump it out, you know. Hand pumps are less than $60. You can carry them like a tool wherever you go, and you'll always find wells and casings, you know, that are going down.
And to store water, you recommend glass?
Yeah, I wouldn't drink or carry water in anything but glass. I know it's heavy. Thermoses are very cool, you know, because they're glass-lined and they'll, you know, but you don't like chilled water. What you want is, you know, body temperature water. That's the way it best assimilates. And if it's structured, and you can do that with light, you know, a little bit of UV, or you can do that with a couple of electrodes. You can restructure the water a little bit, put some zap into it. Basically, the way that works, and Jerry will explain it much better, is that when the water molecule touches a surface, what happens is there is a realignment of the dipole moment. And that causes a series of charges, and that's Richard Feynman. Like likes like, and all the positive charges go up here and all the negative charges go down there, and then you have a battery. And how you make it more efficient is the kinds of surfaces. That's what Patterson discovered using iridium. And so different mineral salts, whatever, they all have a different boundary relationship with water, and what Jerry calls the easy boundary or the exclusion zone. And the exclusion zone is that there's no water, it's just charges. That's where the concept of cold fusion comes from. And the Patterson cell is basically a column of a whole bunch of zillion little balls of iridium filled with water, and they put one volt at the top, and they get 200 volts at the bottom of the pump. And that is taking that structure, using the power that forms that structure in memory. Basically, it's like a memory.
And one last thing about water, and then we'll move on. You said body temperature water.
Yeah.
Are you saying that drinking cold water is not recommended?
No, it doesn't metabolize nearly as much. Yet before it can be metabolized, it has to warm up to body temperature for it to go into the food cells. And so sitting and drinking cold water might feel like refreshing, but so is Coca-Cola, and neither of them are good for you. You know, you drink tepid tap water, you know, the room temperature water, that's best. And that means you're pulling less out of bone marrow. That's where most of your water comes from, to digest your food.
Well, really, I thought that drinking cold water actually made you burn more calories because your body had to spend more calories trying to make it warmer.
Yeah, good luck with that concept. Actually, it's not as good on digestion at all, and not as efficient. And the gut isn't very efficient in the first place. It only does about 28% if you're lucky. You know, 28% of absorption of nutrients and value, you know, mineral you put through your gut. About 28%. That's all you get. The rest of it is gone.
Finish your statement.
No, it's okay. There's ways to make things where your body is more efficient in the way it materializes things and turns it into you. Isn't it amazing? Everything you eat becomes you. That's how it works. Cold fusion.
Well, they say also, people always say, you are what you eat. I say, you are what they eat. And I'm talking about, obviously, the people who eat animals and so on.
Yeah, I had a friend that was an anthropologist. He'd gone over to Borneo and learned how to eat grub. And so what he liked to do to his kids in the morning, he'd be out in the garden with them, and he'd grab these big green slugs and pop one in his mouth. And he says, well, if it's going to eat my breakfast, I'll eat it. Gross everybody out. It was funny. He was Monty West. He was, there were a lot of showmen back then. And I it was kind of cool to be in the 60s and the early 70s doing all of this kind of work, because that it was open. It's different now. Actually, Leon Sidorov, editor, she's an incredible Russian editor on Emergent Mind. It's a zine on the internet with Maddie Pitkinen and Alex Kavarainen, and you know the names. They're all writing and contributing, and she said there was like a brain drain in the 80s where research was no longer about blue sky. It had to have application or else. If it didn't have an application, marketing, whatever, if they wouldn't study, it wasn't worth studying. Now imagine where Monsanto came in on that in the 90s. You know, Monsanto was actually a weapons company in the 40s.
That's right.
Yeah, it made Paraquat and Agent Orange and 2,4-D. That's what it did. And it was only that brief stint where they got into seed control, and then they moved into GMOs. They are currently, just for the record, altering a gene in wheat specifically target a bacteria in your gut you got from a cat. It's called T. gundi, and if you've had a cat up next to your face, you're infected. I would say almost one quarter or even more of America has that gut bacteria. It's inert. It doesn't do anything unless it's activated. When it's activated, then what Science News called it was little mind benders. What does that bring to mind? They're controlling you through the food you're eating and the enteric nervous system, which is your first brain. And that's—
Wait a second, Rick. This all seems like they're creating Trojan horses.
Oh, imagine that. Much more insidious than even that. Yes, that's correct. Yes, that's a good way to look at it. Yes. And they, and, you know, the, and what is it called? Gladomorphin, you know, and the more you eat pastry, the more you want, because it makes you, releases opiates down there in your gut, which has got neurotransmitters, and they're getting doped up just like your brain does with epithelines. Look, it's, there's things going on and that are so insidious, and they're all about greed. Has nothing to do with the benefits of mankind. And that's the part that's so scary, is the intent of all of this. Now, that's your assignment, is to, how do you change that movie?
And that, yeah, how do you?
Yeah. Now, that's what my book is about. Those power tools that I developed for SEALs to make them Superman basically allow you to take personal control of your own evolution. And now, and here's the bad news. I don't care how long you sit on the couch, you just recycle into another life or whatever way that works until you get off that couch. The rapture never came and got me. The only way I got enlightened was by going out and getting it. Now, here's some good news. What your education is the one thing you do get to take with you. So there you go. There's your personal responsibility chore for the day. And it starts one step at a time, Allie, just like, you know, Carl Sagan put it to Allie. The basic idea is it's a long process, and you start one step at a day. And I started with a garden, and then the second year, the garden started to really put out, and I had to do something with that food, and I learned how to can. And the third year, you know, each year you do something that's doable, that's within your possibility. It's like Simon says, you can take halfway to the door. It's a process. It's not about getting to the door, because you'll never get there. It's not
a slow process is better than slow progress better than no progress.
Well, then that's called path 25, leading in the Kabbalah. That's path 25 art. You know, it's a process going to Tiphereth, Christ consciousness, or union with your own consciousness. Right now, I'm exploring path 13, which is high priestess. I'm going to try to figure out how to get across the abyss alive. That's what they Christians call ascension. God so favored you that you didn't have to die. Good luck.
By the way, I like the art on the cover of Power Tools for the 21st Century and the workbook as well. Let's talk about the new book, Power Tools for the 21st Century. Excellent title. People who listened to our three-hour interview earlier this year may remember, but those who may be new to your work, give us, first of all, some historical content and your work with Navy Intel.
Well, it all started in high school. They're actually doing a pilot movie, a series in Hollywood called Spook Central. And it's about my life as a child. When I was a junior and senior in high school, I invented a new Meson field theory, and then the senior year I built a linear accelerator to actually create particles going faster than the speed of light. I was the first American to do that. I did it as a high school student. I came in number two. Guess who beat me in the science fairs?
Who?
Robert Strom with a computer called UNIVAC. It happened. That's the year I did it. However, that was 1960 when I proposed muons as a type of meson. Now it's an elementary particle, but at that time, and muons, by the way, are associated with cold fusion. And then I applied that concept to a linear accelerator. I built this thing with a hydrogen bubble chamber, and I had Cherenkov radiation. The Russians had gotten a Nobel Prize on that the year before, and no American had duplicated that experiment. I was the first American. I did it as a high school. And so if you don't think old man DuPont didn't have a bullseye on me, they orchestrated everything in my education, from my undergraduate work at Pullman, Washington State University, with Dr. Raymond Band, the band theory, go figure. And there's Donaldson doing MRI studies, nuclear magnetic resonance, there I was. And then they sent me off to Delaware, where I worked at the Experimental Research Station in South Park. I was actually up in Wilmington at the research station, and then I was in Newark. With instrument product division, and they got me into Delaware, where I was at Ivy League, where I was studying under Dr. R.D. Murray. And, he was solid state physics. That, all that technology was, quote, supposed to have come from Roswell, but, you know, as far as I could tell, and then I went to Princeton and MIT and, you know, taught some at Harvard, and now I'm just an old grumpy man. When I came out of graduate school, Boeing hired me. And I went to work for Boeing and started doing some of my secret, top secret vault permit work with Boeing. And then when Boeing went upside down, I then continued my work in anesthesiology at the University of Washington under Jerry Pollack. And that's 1970 to 1979. And then I woke up. 11 years with military. I started with SEAL Corporation, which is Navy SEALs now, and I was SEAL Unit number one, and they wanted me to make them into Superman using toys. What do? That's this book, and describing all the tools I developed, toys. And then I went into agriculture and started working with Chuck Walters, Acres USA, and had a national newsletter that was called the Herb Market Report. And now that's into a five-volume set called the Encyclopedia of Alternative Agriculture. It's probably about 8 inches thick when it's all finished.
Did Chris Carter ever contact you during the X-Files and asked you, because about a year or two ago, the people who write for the TV series Fringe, they contacted me asking if I had some stories to share. So I wonder if they ever contacted you.
Well, Chris Carter, I wrote the first 8 episodes for Fox. I did the write-up, and I didn't want to move to Hollywood, and that's when they brought Carter in.
Is that right?
Yeah. I did all that. I'm writing for Hollywood right now. Wait till you hear what I'm doing, man. It's right now. They used to take me up into Vancouver, and I would act as an advisor on set when they would have a thing. The reason they didn't use my series was because I had 9 operas. Remember, I was Navy Intel. If I needed 20 people, like pathologists and whatever, they were there. Let's see, there's articles on the work I did with Dr. Carl Motte, psychic surgery, the University of Washington, the Primate Center. He was the dean of psychiatry, and we did studies with Tony Agpala, and had a ring of doctors watching. We did the original, under Jerry Pollack and others, we did the original studies with Dr. Chu on acupuncture. That's where the whole concept of microtubules came out. It wasn't Hameroff. It was Dr. John Vanika. And Jerry and I worked under Ray Fink. Ray was in charge of research, and we were on fourth floor. That's where all the weird stuff happened. Half of my work happened across campus on the Department of Physics. underground, high-end level security. Like there was. That's how it was. And sometimes I'd go up. And then I worked under the smoking man himself, Dr. Carl Schleicher. I was Northwest Regional Director of MRU. Dr. Wilbur Franklin was at Kent State and would do all the work in the Midwest. So anything weird happened on the West Coast, that was mine.
So hold on, Dr. Carl Schleicher, was he the equivalent of the smoking man from the X-Files?
Yeah. Who sits at the same desk on Wisconsin Avenue for 48 years? He was there for 48 years. Charles Stone right now is the one running it. It's not the same as it was. Stone is okay. I know him. But Schleicher was the bottom line. I think he was an alien. I'm just kidding. I loved him. He's the one that got me into the mind control studies. When I was at the UW, there was a guy named Delgado in the lab next to me with chip implants before he went to Yale. And Moore was doing ketamine, telepathy, and BZ studies. And I was doing microwave, you know, what you call Commander Solo and synthetic telepathy and, you know, what is that, cloning emotions? That's a good subject. A lot of shit came out of that. And I was in the middle of it, and it blew me away. I didn't go to school to make weapons. And so what I did is I just turned around, became a mountain man, moved up into the Okanagans, and had a three-story log home. The military would come in on a helicopter when they'd need me. And I started farming in the Wileys. My first crop was catnip. I had this farm cat that had a big tunnel worn down, going down into that field. Every morning, it'd leave a little gizzard on the road. Dad, I love you. Catnip.
So, X-Files, how true was it?
No, most of it is Hollywood. And there were artifacts. The stuff I wrote was real. You know, that craft where you got sick on it because it shifted phases and it would mess your DNA up. That's what it was doing. It was doing a physics that we yet do not have. Now we're talking about toroid physics and gravitational, you know, vortexes and the way they balance them in a three or four pod system. But back then, this is like early on. We had no idea what we were looking at. I did not do as much alien stuff. We knew about aliens, but mostly we were worried about what the Russians were doing. And this series that they're writing on me, the Spook Central, the first story is the realization that I come to having doing, a, let's say, a study in paranormal, and then it shows what I learned from that. And in the first sequel, in the series called, basically it shows me realizing that with the joint manned expedition to Mars in 1968, that was a secret paper I saw, that basically Nikita Khrushchev banging his shoe on a gavel, it's a gavel on at the UN podium, was showmanship. It was not real, that the Berlin Wall, if been a Berliner, was not real, that Antarctica got hit with Kennedy, you know, with a nuclear weapon trying to take out that Nazi base. I have physically been to Antarctica, so I can talk about that one on a literal level. Of course, there's an old Nazi base there. I saw a base there that was probably 14th century Viking. There I saw caverns going down deeper. And when you're 40 miles down into the mantle and you see things going down into further caverns that are not part of the mantle, they're part of Middle Earth, now you realize that your aliens or so-called whatever could be a humanoid that escaped the flood.
That's intraterrestrials.
What's that?
Intraterrestrials.
Yeah, maybe. You know, hollow Earth. Who knows? You know, time travel. I have no idea. What I have done is in my own studies, I have seen two artifacts. I did studies on two artifacts. And now, absolutely convinced, no, there's obviously something else going on out there besides man. And whether it's from Rigel 4 or from 2097 or, alternate race under the mantle, who knows? I don't know. I've seen artifacts. So that's that. That part is real. And the way Carl Sagan would put it, it would seem like a terrible waste. That there is.
Now, let me stay here with Antarctica. This is too interesting to let go. What year? And in what capacity?
Yeah. I went was 74.
And what capacity were you there?
I was not in charge of this one. I was there as a physicist to look at the bioluminescence on the walls that created the light in the cavern. We're talking about a cave underground that was more than a mile high.
Bioluminescence, meaning that there are organisms that light it?
It was an analogy thing that grows on the walls. And it was bioluminescent, and that was my area of expertise. That's what I did when I studied.
Do they light it enough so that you don't have to use any artificial lighting to go in?
It was different, but yeah, it was light in there. It was like, you know, being in a lit auditorium, except there was a mile high and there was weather. I saw it rain, you know, I saw that. And so, and it was warm. Thermals. There was all kinds of underground water everywhere.
Whatever happened to the Nazi base?
Well, it was in shambles. I don't know how that all played because I wasn't part of that. I can tell you what I know, and then I supplemented. Okay, because I know you're interested. In 48, Admiral Byrd had a fleet of ships went into.
Yes.
They got their tail waxed. That's where they came up with Foo Fighters and jets that did not exist at first. There are some Russian videos that will actually show ship sinking. I think they lost like literally three of them or something like that, and it waxed them good. And it wasn't, they were dug in. And I think in 61 or two.
But was it 48 or was it 1946 to 1948?
Well, it was in 48 when he ran. That's when the interface happened and there was this exchange of something going on and we didn't really come out very well.
When they got their butts kicked.
Yeah. The video I saw was from 48. And I saw the ship sinking. I saw these unusual looking little things called Foo Fighters and jets. Now, whether or not that's a Nazis or not, I don't know. I'll tell you what I do know. There is, in paranormal studies, you know, that I was involved with, there was a knowledge of a race of humans that did escape the flood by going underground. How far underground? I don't know anything about that. Nothing else is written about that. However, like the abyss, there's all kinds of things going on here that we don't have any clue on, like mermaids and swimming with dolphin and all of it. There's all of this unusual chatter going on right now in that regard. And so I know that I don't know. What I do know is, and so if they were living underground for, you know, millennia, of course they wouldn't have any pigment. Of course they would mutate into skinnier, who knows, whatever, gravity-wise, that kind of thing. I don't know. What I do know is that when I was doing a radio show, some guy, older guy than me, I'm 70, he called in and said he was part of the mop-up crew that went in 65 to mop up. Remember, in 62, I think it was in 62, there are pictures of Antarctica with a big hole where the nuclear bomb went off. And then he said they went in 65, and it was a Russian, English, American joint venture to mop up, and some Nazis escaped into lower caverns. And if that's true, then I would say it is amazing that we're not speaking German right now, because what that suggests to me is they ran into something further down that stopped that nonsense.
Well, but don't you think that the Nazi script continues? And look what happened in Germany. It seems that every single event is happening right here in the United States.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I don't have an explanation for that. There's a lot of things I don't understand. Some of it is distraction. And really, what's important now, in my mind, is Fukushima, before we do anything else. That's the one that needs to happen. I think that all nuclear power plants need to be closed down, especially the ones that are on fault lines. And that those reactor pools that they put, you know, cooling pools, is a temporary solution. They never came up with a final solution. They were leaving that to our grandchildren. That's crazy. There it is. And so I would, right, Congressman, I would, as a radio show, inform kids, everybody, that this is probably the first thing we need to focus on is Fukushima. If we want to survive as a race, now that's probably why Mars is colonized as a get out of jail card. There is chatter in remote viewers and some other friends that I know that are involved in that universe that would suggest that Mars is in full revolt right now because of the plutonium pact that was on Curiosity. Like there's some kind of a moratorium on Mars where you can't use that kind of energy at all. And there it is in their face. I don't know how that works.
Who decides the moratorium? Is it the United Nations?
Well, on this planet, maybe.
Right.
You know, I don't know how that all works. I can tell you, you know, on my website, the old website I had a picture of the Earth and I had the moon and I put a third little volumetric ball in to show how much water is on the Earth. And then I bring a fourth ball of water in on how much water is used on Mars. Oh, by the way, that's what I didn't finish on. That was my high school project that was in 1661, was used on the Mariner in 64 to measure the water on Mars. They shot down what they call a tachyon factory that created a bunch of muons, and they create a tachyon factory, and then you measure the radiation spread, and it tells you what products are on there by the index of refraction. That's how it works. And that was in 64, so that's why I was a top draft pick in the early years, and then did what I did up to now. I'm actually still Navy intelligence. I'm retired, and I do what I want. I don't do what I'm asked. I do what I want. And they pretty much let me do what I think's important because by divine right, you know, I've gotten to a place where I think I know it's really important. And my radar says Fukushima first. Monsanto's right in there, but I don't even know what chemtrails are for. That's so weird. The barium oxide, it's killing our trees. It's everywhere. And I'm watching them. They didn't lay it down today because we're rain and all of that. But I saw 2 days ago in between the clouds, they were doing chemtrails, even with our rain.
Even with rain?
Yeah.
Is it so that the precipitation brings down the aluminum, barium, strontium?
Yeah. And basically, they're dropping it at 38,000 to 40,000 feet, which is above the rain anyway. So something else is going on, like a radar. I don't know how that all works. Yeah.
That's one thing I noticed, Rick, traveling. When the plane would go above the clouds, then I would see the planes spraying above the clouds.
Yeah. The chemtrails, oh, listen, man, it's not about HAARP. HAARP has its own elements in there, but really having control of the weather is a military importance across the board.
So. Of course. Of course. And you said, let me just, before I forget, you said that you saw a document in 1968. It was it in 1968 that you saw that we had a mission to Mars?
Yes, I saw actually in 1970, I was working at Boeing and I had vault permits. That means I could go into certain vaults without a need to know. I was a reader. I was like in 3 days of the Condor. I was one of those kind of guys. And they just let me access to whatever. And then I would try to connect dots and figure out what's going on from there. Mostly I caught flies. My mouth was open in disbelief. I had no clue what I was looking at. But I saw the three documents, and the first document was in 64, the Mariner, and it referenced my work. That's how I knew at that moment that I, you know, was special with Navy and that all of this, my education and everything had been orchestrated. And then I saw a second document where they detonated a nuclear warhead on the south pole of Mars in 1965 in their first attempt to terraform it. You have to realize, it didn't work. You have to realize if you were standing, the air is so thin on Mars that if you were standing and your feet were at 70 degrees, your head would be at a minus five. That's how
thin the atmosphere
is. That's correct. But there is more water on Mars. Total volumetric, which is a smaller planet than Earth.
But why do you have to detonate a nuclear weapon? Is it to bring all the debris up to create a new atmosphere?
Yeah, they were trying to somehow convert the water into oxygen so that there was a deep, you know, throwing the water into the atmosphere, creating a deeper, thicker atmosphere with, you know,
right.
Okay, that's what they were trying to do. It didn't work. And that was in 65, and they dropped one on our South Pole. I think it was in either 60 or 61. So you have to understand you know, take that Nazi base out. There's a lot of disinformation out there and rewriting of history that, as a scientist, I've watched it happen. I've seen a lot of things like that. You know, I remember when I was at MIT, we had a different system of computers than just monolithic circuits back then. Before it was transistors, they were called monolithic circuits. And that's where I was studying boundary layers, you know, with indium and gallium, and, you know, you have forbidden zones, and those are your check registers. Well, while all of that was going on in computers as we know them today, there was a second type of technology going out with Corning, with fluidic devices. And basically, they were putting Schmidt triggers and little pieces of stacking of glass on top of each other with little pathways for air, and had a computer system that was actually more efficient using NOR NAND logic. That's, instead of AND or NOT, it was NOR NAND, what you would call object-oriented. It was a way of grouping information, so you had subsets of information, you had more efficiency in the way you transferred algorithms. And that was Corning. And it was better for space, you know, because it wasn't it was impervious to gamma rays. Whereas in solid state physics, you have a half-life on your computer chip of only 8 years. And so, you know, the chip breaks down and half of them die every 8 years, you know, that kind of thing. It's, and they're very sensitive to radiation, especially. That's why everybody's afraid of the grid going down, because that's your ELF spike.
And we have to take our one and only intermission, Rick, but when we come back, I'd like to discuss this a little bit more. The fact that if this is a technology that we are told that we have, how in the world do we use it for space travel if it's going to be fried by solar?
That's a good question.
So let's discuss that when we come back. How do people buy your new book and all your other books?
Oh, you want me to do that now or later?
No, just tell it right now, because we'll take a break and come back.
So all of my books are on the website, oak-publishing.com. That's Oak Publishing. It's a little hyphen in there. And but if you go to my website, Richard Alan Miller, A-L-A-N, richardalanmiller.com, it'll take you to Oak. So either way, PayPal has it, Amazon, we're all over Amazon. And if you do a Google on my name, Richard Alan Miller, Dr. Richard Allen, that'll blow you away. Because I, you know, was one of the few that actually did it. And that's what I'm trying to do now, is write about it. And in agriculture, metaphysics, now magic, which is a higher form of physics.
And that's magic with G-I-C-K, correct?
That is correct. That stants for Medford, Ashland, Grants Pass, Illinois Valley, Cave Junction, and Klamath Falls. Ooh, the state of Jefferson.
Yeah, remember
kidding.
All
just
of that.
Just kidding.
Anyway, folks, don't go anywhere. I'm here with Dr. Richard Alan Miller, who was kind enough to fill today's slot. And we're going with a lot of information that we didn't expect to discuss, but it's important. So when we come back, this is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to Veritas. Don't go anywhere. Thank you for listening to the first segment of this very important interview. To listen to the rest, go to veritasradio.com and subscribe. You will receive your login immediately. We'll take a short intermission, listen to some music, and we'll be right back. Enjoy.
This is a story. A story about all that is. About everything. And about nothing. Time, space, life. The sun, you, me, Earth. Where and what are we? I wonder. Life, human beings, intelligent creatures planted here on a globe. Alive, all of us, without purpose, or maybe with great purpose. ¶¶
that we spend time thinking deeply about the wondrous details of our planet, Earth, our home. The sky protects us from space. Trees and plants give air. Droplets of water fall. Light shines. We try to grasp it. Our little world.
Our little world. This is Matt Stein, author of When Disaster Strikes and When Technology Fails, and you're listening to Veritas.